The Bush administration is planning to propose a measure called the Marriage Initiative. According to some reports, it will call for $1.5 billion over the next 5 years on advertising campaigns, classes, and mentoring programs, all to promote marriage. The Marriage Initiative would be overseen by the Department of Health and Human Services. The target audience would be low-income families, and some of the organizations that would receive grants would be religious, some not. Already, the idea is catching some flack. Some critics say that marriage is not what poor families need most. Other critics wonder if this is the business of government. Today we'll talk about exactly what the Marriage Initiative may entail, and we'll hear from some of its critics. And here with us to explain what the Marriage Initiative is and how it would be implemented is Wade Horn. He's Assistant Secretary for Children and Families at the Department of Health and Human Services. He's with us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for joining us.
It's good to be with you, Neil.
What is that description accurate? Is that what the program is going to be?
Not exactly. First of all, this is not a new proposal from the Bush administration. This is a proposal that was contained in the president's proposal for the reauthorization of the welfare reform law, known as TANF, the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families Program, mm-hmm. which was announced 2 years ago. And the proposal includes $200 million a year over 5 years in federal funds to do this, to help couples who have already chosen marriage for themselves access marriage education services where they can develop the skills and knowledge necessary to form and sustain healthy marriages. It's not about promoting the decision to marry. It is about helping those who have already made the decision to get married or who are already married to provide them with greater access on a voluntary basis to marriage education services.
Is this the federal government subsidizing marriage counseling?
Well, it's not marriage counseling. I'm a psychologist. I know, I think therapy and counseling are good things, but this is not marriage counseling. This is marriage education, and there's a difference. Let me sort of explain this by way of sort of analogy. There's another service that we routinely provide to people called parenting education, and the reason we provide parenting education is because we believe that people are not born good or bad parents, but rather they develop the skills either to be good or bad parents, and that parenting education can be helpful in helping parents become better parents and more effective parents. And there's very little controversy when the federal government supports parenting education. Well, in the same way, we know that marriage, although perhaps a bit of luck is involved in successful marriages, we also know that a lot of skill is involved in successful marriages. And people don't naturally are not naturally born with the absence or presence of good relationship skills that would enable them to have good marriages. They learn them. And so what we'd like to do is provide them with a skills-based approach, marriage education, so that they are more likely to attain what they say they want for themselves, which is a healthy and stable marriage.
The New York Times called this a relatively inexpensive but politically potent initiative. Which organizations would be receiving these grants, and to do specifically what?
There are two different pots of money in the President's Healthy Marriage Initiative. The first is a competitive state grant program that states would apply for. States would have to provide a dollar-for-dollar match in applying for the money, but the states would come up with a plan, submit it to the federal government for its review, and in a competitive process, we would award half the federal money to states who are successful in that competition. The other half would go to coalitions of community-based organizations who are interested in doing something in their local communities. And again, it would be a competitive process. There's no pre-wired grant awards going to any organizations. Mm-hmm. And there would be a competition. This is something that the federal government does routinely and with discretionary grants. If we hold a competition and the highest quality applications, the one that get funded.
If you'd like to join our conversation, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. Our guest is Wade Horn, Assistant Secretary for Children and Families at the Department of Health and Human Services. And let's begin with Mark, and Mark is on the line with us from Portland, Oregon.
Hi, thank you very much. And Dr. Horn, my question is, why is it that our federal government feels like they need to intervene or encourage something that's essentially a personal choice that people can decide to make or not make? I mean, what is the precedent for this, and what, you know, is there any kind of, is there some sort of established reason for doing this now?
Well, again, this proposal is not about interfering with the free choice of couples to get married or not to get married. That's completely up to the couple. I am a conservative. I believe in limited government. And I think that government ought not to get into the business of influencing the decision of individual couples about whether or not to get married. That's up to them.
But about the decision to divorce?
Or the decision to divorce. I don't think that the federal government ought to get into the business of telling somebody whether they should or should not get divorced. But very few people on their wedding day go down the aisle saying, what I'd like out of this relationship, this marriage, is 2 years of a pretty good marriage, 3 years of fighting constantly, a really messy divorce, and then 15 years fighting over custody of the kids. Most people on their wedding day say what we'd like to have is a healthy, stable, lifelong marriage. Now, most people, unfortunately, believe that that is mostly a matter of luck. You either find your soulmate and that happens or you don't. Mm-hmm. What marriage education has taught us is that marriage is also about skills. And what separates a healthy and stable relationship in a marriage from an unhealthy and unstable one is not the frequency of conflict, but how those couples manage conflicts. If they either avoid conflict or escalate it, that's associated with high levels of marital dissatisfaction and unhappiness and high levels of divorce. If they're able to negotiate conflict in positive, healthy ways, that's associated with higher levels of marital satisfaction, happiness, and lower levels of divorce. And the good news is we can teach things like listening skills, communication skills, problem-solving skills, negotiation skills, and that's all this is about. You know, to say that by offering on a voluntary basis marriage education, we are encouraging or forcing people to get married would, by way of analogy, say by offering parenting education, we are coercing people to become parents. The government doesn't coerce people to become parents.
Excuse me, if I may interrupt. The federal government coming out and making a statement is certainly not forcing the public to do one thing or another, but it's a little bit more than encouragement as well. I think it's a fairly powerful statement when, you know, the folks that we vote for come out and say, well, we're gonna help you make this decision, and if you make this decision, we're going to help you do it better. I also don't know, you know, what sort of validity there is in our federal government telling us how we're going to have a better marriage. I think that that's a deeply personal thing that may have to do with faith, or it may have to do with something else. But it's not a governmental thing. It has nothing to do with running the country.
Well, one could also
we're doing less of running the country and more of offering ways for people to live a life that reflects some people in the government.
Well, one could also argue that parenting is a personal relationship that one has, and government has no right getting involved and helping people or not helping people or helping people to become better, more effective parents. And yet we've been providing parenting education subsidized by the federal government for decades now, and I don't hear a whole lot of cry out, you know, in the public to get rid of parenting education.
But parenting has little to do with the choice of your partner. It has little to do with your lifestyle, per se. I mean, it has more to do with lifestyle, but it has little to do with your choice of partner. And the government has said, the federal government right now, their position, at least from the presidential position, is, you know, a marriage is between two adults, a man and a woman. And they're saying, and now we're going to tell you how to, we're going to make some suggestions on how you might be able to live this relationship or marriage in a better way. And that's, you know, those two statements together, that says the best way to have a marriage is to have a male and a female. And here's how you do it. And that's not respecting a diverse populace that we have.
Well, again, I don't know how many different ways I can say this, but the government, through this initiative, is not going to get in the business of intervening in terms of the personal decision about couples whether to get married or not. And marriage law, as a matter of federalism, is in fact something that is left to the states. The other thing that's interesting about this, because I hear this also from sort of a libertarian argument, you know, this is introducing government into family life and an unwarranted intrusion. But I'll tell you, you know, if you want to see government intrude into family life, get married and then get divorced. And if you're a non-custodial parent, the government is going to tell you how often you can see your kids, what days you can see your kids, whether or not you can pick your kid up after school, or whether or not you can visit your child at a hospital, how much money you have to spend on your child. And if you don't spend that money on your child, we're going to put you in jail even. I mean, the idea that somehow government is not involved in family life is not true. What this initiative would actually wind up doing in the long run is reduce the need for government to be involved in family life, because by helping couples on a voluntary basis access services where they can build strong and healthy marriages, you have less marital breakdown. When you have less marital breakdown, you have less need for government to interfere in the daily activities of people's lives.
Let's get another caller on the line. Now, this is Nolan, who's with us from Little Rock, Arkansas.
Hi.
Hi.
I enjoy your show. I'm a first-time caller.
Thank you.
Can you tell me again the amount of money that we're looking at spending for this initiative?
It's about $200 million a year, each year over the next 5 years. And to give that some perspective, the office that I oversee, the Administration on Children and Families in the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, spends each year $46 billion. And so we've hardly replaced a system of public services with now the only service available to people being marriage education.
Math, not my strong suit, but I get that at $1 billion over 5 years.
No.
Okay. My next question is, after we've spent all my tax money, how are we going to determine whether or not we've actually completed anything? What's our success rate? What's our benchmark? What are we aiming for?
It's an excellent question, and we're busily actually putting together some evaluation models, because we do see this as a demonstration program to determine what works and what doesn't work. I mean, if at the end of the day...
expensive demonstration program.
Nolan, give him a chance to answer, will you?
Sure.
First of all, we were very concerned that we weren't adding additional burden on the taxpayers to fund this program. So what we did is we decreased spending in one part of the budget in my office in order to fund this. For example, there's a $100 million bonus fund for states that are successful in reducing illegitimacy rates. There's not a lot of evidence that that bonus fund has actually resulted in much, but we do give that money out every year. Well, what we've done instead is
illegitimacy rates have been going down, too.
They've been going down, but there's no evidence that the illegitimacy bonus is what's driving that, because even the states that win it have a hard time telling us what they did to drive those down. It seems what we're really rewarding is changing demographics. And so what we're saying is, rather than using that $100 million for reward something of which we don't know, let's use that money instead to fund innovation in this area and then evaluate to see what works and what doesn't work.
Nolan?
Great. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
Okay, so but there's not going to be any hard number that say at this number, if we've decreased the divorce rate by X percent, that's success, and if we haven't, that's failure?
No, in fact, we've been very clear that the success of this initiative will not be tied to marriage rates per se. Because you can get more marriage rates by coercing people to get married or making divorce harder, and you get a whole lot more bad marriages, but you have higher marriage rates. What we're interested in is growing the proportion of kids who are growing up in married households where the marriage is a healthy one as opposed to an unhealthy one. Now, I'd like someone to stand up and say, you know, it doesn't matter to children whether the marriage of their parents is a good one or a bad one. It really doesn't matter if kids come home to a household where their parents respect each other, listen to each other, communicate well, or they come home to a household where the parents are constantly bickering and arguing and can't stand each other. You know, children really do notice the difference. And so what we're saying is, let's try to grow the proportion of kids who are growing up in married households where the marriage is a healthy one. And one way you can do that, by the way, is by providing serious premarital education, which can, in fact, and does divert about 15% of couples who say they want to get married away from marriage, because you find out in that premarital education they're either unprepared for marriage or violence is occurring in the dating relationship, and marriage is not the cure for violence in a dating relationship.
Our guest is Wade Horn at the Department of Health and Human Services, where he's Assistant Secretary for Children and Families. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join the conversation, or email us totn@npr.org. Back after a break. I'm Neil Conan, Talk of the Nation, NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about President Bush's plan to focus on poor families and help them make their decisions about marriage. Our guest is Wage Horn, the Assistant Secretary of Secretary for Health and Human Services. He's with us here in Studio 3A, and I didn't want to get back into it, not to promote the idea of marriage, but to help them with marriages. You're invited to join our discussion. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And just before the break, you were talking about, you know, how you measure success or failure. But before going into this, does the government have any indication, any surveys, any facts that would indicate that marriage classes are effective?
Yes. Actually, there's a great deal of research in marriage education that shows that we can, in fact, teach listening, communication, problem-solving, and negotiation skills. And that we do, when we randomly assign couples to either getting that education or not, that they report that, A, they can, in fact, learn those skills, B, they do, in fact, implement them, and C, they report higher levels of marital satisfaction and happiness in their marriage. There's even some data that's been done that looks at 5 years after the marriage education services, what is the stability of, of those marriages, and the evidence, although not completely conclusive, does show that they continue to have a advantage in terms of marital satisfaction and happiness and have lower divorce rates. But there is stuff, there's a lot that we still need to know, and that's one of the reasons why we take very seriously our obligation to evaluate these programs, not just to see whether we get the effects we'd like, but also to make sure we don't get negative unintended consequences that we don't want. And the big thing we will be looking for here is any increase in domestic violence, because we certainly don't want to have this initiative result in an increase in the probability of someone being the victim of domestic violence, and we'll be looking at that very carefully. Now, we believe this is actually going to decrease the incidence of domestic violence, but we want to make sure we measure it.
The theory being if troubled relationships stick together longer, if violence is part of those, it might continue the violence.
Well, there are some people who say that. On the other hand, again, with premarital education, one of the things that you find that you may not find if they don't go through premarital education is violence in the dating relationship. And when you find violence in the dating relationship, the answer is not to say, go get married and everything will be fine. Mm-hmm. The solution is to say to the victim to get out of this relationship, the last thing you want to do is marry this abuser. So we think actually domestic violence rates will go down.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Rich from Middlebury, Indiana.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, there are many comments and questions I would have, but the one I called about that I want to get to before I lose power on my phone is I understand this initiative is geared towards lower-income couples or families, and I was wondering whether or not there were statistics or something or why that was being targeted. I thought divorce was a phenomenon pretty much across the board in our society. I've known a number of people who've gone through high school relationship classes or in the college level. Or like when I got married, the Catholic Church required us to take a class, yet I know many friends who've done that who've also gotten divorced who aren't lower income.
That's an excellent question, and one that frequently comes up. No, we are not focusing on low-income couples because we think that low-income couples are either particularly deficient in these skills, nor because we believe that marriage is particularly problematic in low-income communities. If economics were the simple driver of the success of marriage and driving healthy marriages, then Hollywood would be filled with lots of healthy, stable marriages. The reason
right.
why we're talking about low-income couples is because they have difficulty with access. They don't have the same access to marriage education services as more affluent couples do, either because they don't have the resources to purchase marriage education. Serious marriage education can cost $200, $300, $400, $500, or because the marriage education services are not co-located in their communities. It doesn't do any good to say to a low-income couple, we got a free service for you, but it's 50 miles away out in the suburbs. So what we're going to try to do is make sure that low-income couples, as a matter of equity, have equal access to the same kinds of marriage education services as more affluent couples do.
Rich, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Let's go now to Jim, and Jim's with us from Chico, California.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
I live in a community that has a large number of same-sex couples, including same-sex couples that have children. And, of course, same-sex couples that have domestic violence on the other side of the coin. I'm calling to find out if this initiative is going to be available to same-sex couples.
Well, there certainly are a lot of programs that are under my purview that are open to same-sex couples currently. For example, I run a lot of programs that provide family support services, and there's no prohibition against gay and lesbian couples accessing those services. I am, however, a federal official, and there's a federal law, and I'm bound by federal law. The federal law is called the Defense of Marriage Act. It was passed in 1996, signed by President Clinton, which defines for the purposes of all federal programs marriage as being the legal union between one man and one woman. I don't have a choice. I cannot ignore federal law. But at the same time, again, you know, I've got a $46 billion a year budget. We're talking about a $200 million initiative. All of the rest of those services, as far as I know, there's not another single penny of the services I oversee that are restricted in any way to gay and lesbian individuals or couples as long as they meet other usually income eligibility criteria. And we have absolutely no problem with gays and lesbians, individuals or couples accessing those services to which they're entitled.
Well, I'm certainly happy to hear that, and on the other hand, I hope I don't hear the term illegitimate attached to children or births any longer. I find that a very unfortunate term, but I'm very happy to hear that there's a lot of programs out there available to the wide spectrum of citizens we have here.
And I agree with you about the term illegitimacy, and you will never hear it come out of my mouth except to say it's a horrible word. There are no illegitimate children.
Excellent.
Jim, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Let's go now to Caroline in Baraboo, Wisconsin.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I'm a little concerned about this $200 million. I know that in the grand scheme of things, that's probably not a lot, but I'm also in a community who's fighting to keep its small schools open, and I think a lot of this education could be done and should be done in the schools. I mean, I understand that they have marriage classes and things like that in the schools. Why do we need something new?
Well, actually, one of the uses of these monies could be from junior high schools and high schools and providing relationship skills training and marriage education training. So it's something that could be utilized by educational institutions to provide this kind of skills-based education.
So, in other words, it could be in schools.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. Caroline, thanks very much for the call.
Okay.
And Wade Horn, we know you have to run. We appreciate giving us the amount of time you were able to give us today. We really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
Wade Horn is an Assistant Secretary for Children and Families at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and he joined us here in Studio 3A. And joining us now is Stephanie Kuntz, a Professor of History and Family Studies at the Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington. Good of you to join us.
Thank you.
What are your problems with the proposal?
Well, you know, I came in the second half of Wade Horn's proposal, and it's begun to be watered down so hard that it's almost difficult to come any more out against it than apple pie. But, you know, the devil's in the details in these programs, and I think that there's a lot of devil in a lot of the details. This campaign has gone through several versions. You know, Wade Horn originally wanted, for example, to discriminate against unmarried couples in housing, and then he changed his mind on that. And then the marriage promotion had started with West Virginia giving $100 a month bonus to women who got married, and they still do that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In Oklahoma, they've been funding couples to go around giving rallies promoting marriage and explaining how good it is and reviewing books explaining how good it is. A lot of these programs are available to people who can set themselves up. You can become a marriage counselor, premarital education, in a two-day workshop. So, you know, I get kind of confused because actually there are several very good, well-researched, rigorously evaluated programs going on now to say, what can we do to help low-income couples stabilize and strengthen their relationships?
So you're concerned about where these funds would go, not with the idea of marriage education.
Well, what he finally got it down to is now all we really want is equal access to low-income people for marriage counseling. Well, if that's all we want, why not also equal access to relationship counseling and parenting classes? You know, every time they get, every time somebody points out a problem with this blanket idea that somehow promoting marriage is going to solve America's social problems, and especially the problems of low-income people, they phrase it in a much more subtle way. And yet what it really boils down to is that there is this tremendous idealization of the idea that marriage itself is some kind of solution both to poverty and to the problems we have sustaining commitments and raising kids in our rapidly changing world. And they don't want it to be attached to anything, to the other families, for example, the gay and lesbian families, the divorced families, the one-third of low-income people who have a baby together who, according to most of the recent research, shouldn't be together at all. Nevertheless, shouldn't those couples have access to parenting counseling? I think that there's a real hidden agenda here that even though it gets softer and softer and softer every time I hear the explanation, has to do with trying to put this forward as a solution instead of just a little piece of a multi-pronged program to help people with their relationships.
Well, as a little piece, do you see this as a step in the right direction?
Some pieces of it, but not all of it, and this is what worries me about it. To the extent that we have people actually helping couples decide whether they, if they want to get married, what are their counseling skills? What I want.
Well, in you weren't with us at the early part of the program. Wade Hort said specifically that's not what the program is for. It's for.
Well, but that's what, you know, I talk to social workers all around the country, to state government, and the details when they come out to them are told you can get funds as long as you build in promoting marriage to what you do. You can do just about anything you want. Now, I know that the government is also funding three or four very excellent programs to really test what will work and what won't work. I am in favor of that. I don't like it being pushed into the corner, as it seems to me that it's happening here, with this idea that if you think that's a good idea, then that's all we need to talk about. Of course the other stuff's important, but we won't talk about it. I think we need to say to ourselves, let's be very clear, marriage is not a solution to poverty. It's not a solution to the problems of raising kids that have been born out of wedlock. Many times you don't; those mothers should not be marrying the fathers. And I want to know what we're going to be doing on all those things. I don't want someone to tell me, don't worry, I'll take care of it, as long as you just agree with me that this is a good idea.
Let's get some more callers on the line. Again, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's go with Alicia, who's with us from Newport News in Virginia.
Hi. I have to say that your present speaker says everything I wanted to say. I think this initiative is very frightening. It reeks of a theocratic agenda. An evangelical theocratic agenda that is making a wave here in this country. And marriage is not the be-all and end-all of any relationship or anyone's life. And, you know, let's think about our history. There were women involved in marriages and arranged marriages in this country that should never have been married and couldn't get out of a marriage. That if you weren't married, it was a social stigma. And that's what this agenda seems to reek of. And it's not going to solve poverty. It's not going to solve homelessness or anything else by giving money to people and telling them stay married. We're going to counsel you to stay married. I didn't hear your other call, other speaker talk about what the marriage rate was for affluent people who have access to all this education and counseling. You know, do they have a higher rate of marriage?
I think
divorce rate is still the same?
I can't speak for Wade Hort, but I think he did note on the program that, this is not a problem solely associated with lower income.
Right, but what he was saying was that they found that more affluent people have access to these marriage education and counseling, and they want to do the same thing to poor people. Well, did they do the study to sit and say that those affluent people with access to the counseling and the education, do they stay married? Or do they get divorced just as low-income people maybe?
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Stephanie Kuntz, you may have the answers to those questions better than I do.
Well, I don't have the answers, but I think...
Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Someone, was I being asked to speak here?
Yes, you were.
Okay, sorry. Okay, what I wanted to say was that I do think that offering marital counseling on equal access to low-income people is a very good thing. But I think this is being put forward, and very conservative groups such as the Heritage Foundation are explicitly putting forward that they don't want marriage plus. They don't want anything on top of this marriage counseling. They think that marriage is a solution to poverty. They do not want anything that allows the fact that some people may not want to get married and still need access to counseling, for example, how to do a divorce better without messing their kids up, or how to co-parent if they decide they don't want to get married to each other. And I think that's what scares me about this sort of push. It's not that one little piece of it isn't bad, but by the time they've got you just focused on the one little piece of it that's not bad, they've got you distracted from the fact that there are just, you know, 50% of kids are going to pass at some point in their childhood not living in a two-parent married couple family. Let's say we could get down to 40%. That's still too large a number to ignore. And I am very concerned about this narrow focus on marriage promotion. And also, your last questioner raised it very well. Who is going to be doing the training and on what grounds? There are a lot of certified marriage preparation trainings who are getting funds who believe, for example, that the best way to counsel people to get married is to teach the women that the man has to be the head of the household.
Let's get another caller in. This is Eunice, and Eunice is with us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yes, I just wanted to say I think this is a great initiative. I am 37 years old, been happily married for 12 years this past December. Speaking as an African American, I think with 70 to 80% of kids being born out of wedlock, this would be a great opportunity to help them to learn that there's a certain way when you have a father in the household, it's depriving the children from the father not being there, and I think marriage is a great idea. And it seems like all the calls or the callers, what I've heard has just been negative. And I think marriage is a great thing, and it should be promoted.
Stephanie Kuntz, we just have about 45 seconds left. But
well, I think that is a good, I am in favor of good marriages too, but I think there's a lot of naivete here that is being played upon in this. What about the people that we get married and then get divorced two or three years down the road? Their kids could be worse off. The mothers are more likely to be in poverty if that happens than if they'd never gotten married in the first place. We have to think this through more carefully, and I think it's being thrown out as a political bone to a particular constituency right now, and it's not a really serious, well-thought-out program.
Eunice, thanks.
Well, we tend to disagree there, but I think the promotion of marriage, we need to look at why we get married in the first place. Is it just because of an economical situation? Are we just looking for, you know, someone to take care of us? We need to, there again, look at why we're getting married, and I think these classes will help you to evaluate. Maybe this is not the person I should be spending the rest of my life with.
Eunice, thank you very much for the call, and Stephanie Kuntz, thank you for your time today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Stephanie Kuntz, a professor of history and family studies at the Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington, and national chair on the Council of Contemporary Families. She joined us from her office in Olympia, Washington. More on this subject when we come back from a break. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Tomorrow, Ira Flatow will be here on Science Friday. He'll take a look at New York City in the year 2050 after a full century of human-induced climate change. What would a warming planet mean for this city and its people? Plus, can green design ensure a better future for the Big Apple? That's with Ira Flatow on Science Friday tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. Today, we're talking about President Bush's proposal to spend $1 billion over the next 5 years on marriage education programs for low-income families. If you'd like to join our conversation, the phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is TOTN@NPR.org. And joining us now is Julie Baumgartner, who's executive director of First Things First, which is an organization dedicated to strengthening marriage. She joined us from her office in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
How does your organization do that?
Well, we work to provide training and resources and educational classes that go into the high schools as well as into the community at large and faith-based institutions to teach relationship skills and offer opportunities to enrich marriages.
And do you have any measurements as to how well it works?
Well, I can tell you that for the premarital education classes that we are offering, based on the evaluations, the couples say, in fact, many of them say they came to receive the discount that they would get if they attend 4 hours of premarital preparation, but they walked away with so much more and that the time was well worth it. And we've actually had couples call us back to tell us they're using the skills and they are extremely helpful.
I don't understand what they meant by discount.
In Tennessee, if you attend a premarital education class with a minimum of 4 hours of class time, you receive a discount on your marriage license.
I see. So you get your funding from the state?
No, we do not. We get our funding from individuals, corporations, faith-based institutions, foundations.
And who are the people who attend your classes other than those looking for the discount?
They run the gamut across the socioeconomic spectrum. We have folks who receive TANF, and we also have folks who are middle income and beyond who attend the classes.
So not just for poor people.
That's correct.
How do you respond to at least what you've heard about the proposal that the president is putting forward on marriage education?
I think it's a very good thing. Most people, research shows that most people plan to marry in their lifetime. And what we know based on research is that there are certain skills that we can teach folks, and if they have those skills before they walk down the aisle, then they are much more likely to have a successful marriage or to recognize in the process of the educational classes that this may not be a person they need to marry. Maybe this isn't a healthy relationship, and they should not move forward.
Let's get some callers on the line, and we'll speak now with Hillary. And Hillary's with us from Lake Tahoe, California.
Thank you for taking my call. I work at a domestic violence center, and there's definitely concern amongst advocates against domestic violence that this is a very conflicting policy. Many centers actually get funding from the Department of Health Services, from the maternal child branch, and to operate shelters and other services for people who need to leave an unsafe environment. And I think that I would agree that education ahead of time and making a decision to make a commitment, that does take serious thought. However, advocating for people to stay in a marriage for the sake of the union or for the sake of their children just doesn't work for people who are in a domestic violence situation. A lot of times people stay in an unhealthy relationship because they think it's good for the kids. But the reality is that children who grew up in a domestic violence situation are learning, how to have an unhealthy relationship. A lot of domestic violence centers are doing classes such as domestic violence prevention and healthy relationship skills in high schools and middle schools. But we really can't force people to stay in an unhealthy relationship. And I think there's going to be some confliction due to the funding sources.
I don't know if you were with us earlier, Hillary, but Wade Horn, when he was on, the Assistant Secretary at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, said, yes, indeed, they were concerned about that exact problem that you're talking about, and we're going to try to make sure that they were not trying to urge people to stay in unhealthy relationships. And Julie Baumgartner, is this something that comes up in your program?
Yes, and, we talk about what do unhealthy relationships look like, because you see a lot of people cohabiting, and the relationships are very unhealthy, and there's domestic violence involved in those relationships. And I don't think that we're encouraging people to stay in unhealthy relationships. I think that what we are doing is working to prevent people from going, walking down that aisle and saying, well, I thought he would change, or I thought she would be different once we walk down the aisle. We want them to recognize those warning signs ahead of time, and I would much rather see a broken engagement than someone enter into a marriage knowing it's going to be unhealthy and dangerous.
Mm-hmm. And the previous guest did mention the issue of maybe that there's not so much accountability for who is doing this training, and that there's different models across the nation. And with domestic violence counseling, most programs encourage the victim to have individual counseling, because if they were to have couples counseling, they wouldn't really be, if there's a power and control dynamic, the victim in a domestic violence situation, and that could be a male as well as a female, but they would not be allowed to be open and honest about their feelings in that situation because it would be unsafe for them.
Definitely a thing to watch out for. Hillary, thanks very much for the phone call.
Yeah, thanks.
Let's go now to Joey, and Joey's with us from Manio, North Carolina.
Hi, Neil. Yes, I am from Mania, North Carolina, and I just wanted to say that I'd heard a lot of negative responses to the proposed plan, and I wanted to point out that I voted for Clinton in 92 and for Dole in 96 and for Bush in 2000, and I plan to vote for John Kerry, I hope, in 2004. So I'm not a Republican. You know, I'm not coming at this from, like, you know, whatever Bush says, you know, I love it. You know, I'm just saying that as a single parent, you know, I wish I had had something like that, and that my husband at the time, you know, my child's father could have had, that we could have had this, and I would have taken it, you know, I would have been happy to go together or individually. I mean, just to have something that, you know, would have helped us. And, you know, we didn't have problems really before we married, but once we married, you know, marriage does change things, and you just kind of become a different person. And, you know, and I wish that I'd had those skills, and I feel sorry for my child because she's growing up, you know, without her dad. You know, I can't imagine people calling in and saying, "Oh, this, you know, well, we need to give this another 10 years to think about it." You know, this is like a no-brainer. You know, people need help with their marriages, and they need to know that there are other people who are struggling. And I think it would have been good, for instance, you know, I would never have been able to drag my husband into therapy, but if I could have dragged him to something where, look, you know, these are just couples. You know, everybody's struggling. You know, it's not just us. You know, we're not weird or anything. It's just that, you know, we're not doing too well. We didn't have the education or the modeling that we needed as kids. And so I'm all for it. And I hope that, you know, I think that the person who was on before who presented the whole program, I'm sorry, I don't remember his name, but, you know, I thought he was just very articulate and persuasive. And I think, you know, that's great. Divert $200 million from your huge budget and help. You know, help these kids, because these kids need two parents. They need to see males. They need to see females. I mean, it's just, you know, that's nature, male and female. And you can't grow up really all that healthily, I don't believe, being just with one side or the other. So that's my two cents.
Thanks very much for the call, Joey, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
It's really interesting what she said, because we helped to start the Divorce Education and Mediation Program here in Hamilton County, and many, many of the couples who attend the divorce education class that they are required to attend before moving further in the divorce process. It's a class about the effects of divorce on children, and many of them come out of that saying, where was this before we got married, and why weren't we required to do something like this? And I think we need to remember that people, I don't care where you fall along the socioeconomic spectrum, are looking for relationship. They want affirmation. They want security. They want belonging. And they want respect. And so many young people, when I walk into the high school classroom and into the college classrooms, they have a lot of misinformation about what healthy relationships look like. I see girls, you know, looking for love in all the wrong places, and it's sad. And I think if we've got 85% of Americans who plan to marry at some point in their life, I think we have a responsibility to teach them skills that are going to help them be successful.
Julie Baumgartner, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Julie Baumgartner, Executive Director of First Things First, an organization dedicated to strengthening marriage. She joined us from her office in Chattanooga, Tennessee. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.